everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Ringside Rundown Podcast, brought to you by TWM.news. My name is Eric Vasquez, and joining me on the line is my podcasting partner in crime. Yes, that rhymes. She is Shay Hickson. Shay, what's going on?
Oh, what is up on this Wednesday, this fine Wednesday night? Had to switch it up a little bit.
Yeah, we're one day off from our usual schedule.
Yeah, but we're here. We're still going to make it happen. So I'm excited. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today.
Definitely. I'm kind of glad that we didn't record last night, because I got to check out NXT. Obviously, the big news was Seth Rollins returning to NXT to defend the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And what a phenomenal match that was. I don't know if you had the time to catch it, but it was definitely a great, great match.
I saw some bits and pieces of it. And yeah, from what I saw, it was very good. And what did we expect? I mean, it's Seth Rollins. We say he could have a good match with just about everyone. But yeah, I'd say Bron Breakker definitely rose to the occasion on that match too. It was definitely a good one all around.
For sure. That's a great point that you made about Bron Breakker. I think he's really coming into his own as a character, as a bad guy. He's really embracing it. It's working out well. It's giving him a little bit more of a personality, a little bit more of an edge. So I'm excited to see where he goes from here. From now, I think it might as well be time to call him up to the main roster. I think he already went one-on-one with Seth Rollins. What's left for him to do?
Yeah, I don't think, once you get to Seth Rollins in NXT, I don't think you can really do anything else there. So I feel like he's got to get called up at some point.
Yeah, maybe, possibly, I'm guessing, and this is just a guess, I don't have any scoops or anything, but my guess would be probably after SummerSlam we might see him.
I wouldn't be surprised. That sounds about right. They usually like to save some of those big reveals for after the big four pay-per-views. So yeah, I'd say SummerSlam is a good bet.
Yeah, for sure. Well, if you're a new listener here, first off, thank you very much for taking the time to listen to us banter about pro wrestling. And that's exactly what this podcast is. It's a podcast about pro wrestling, where Shay and I answer questions sent in by our loyal listeners. And obviously, you can send in questions. We'll let you know how to do that at the end of the show. But they're questions all across the board about AEW and WWE. I think you said we have like something like, what'd you say, 20 something questions?
26, I believe. So
yeah,
a lot.
So it's a big episode. So we might as well get right into it. What's the first question?
All right, we're gonna jump right into Jeff's questions, and his first one is it just him, or has LA Knight gained the kind of organic popularity that came for Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston before they won their titles? Yeah,
that's an interesting pairing, I guess you could say. The thing about LA Knight is just that he's just so charismatic, and he's able to turn it up to 11 on the screen that you kind of just gravitate towards him. You know, he's definitely my favorite to win the Money in the Bank. I think it'll be interesting to see him with that pursuit of, I guess now it's any title, because before it was you could only challenge for the world titles, but now they're putting all titles on the docket.
Well, it's a good way to shake it up, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good way to kind of keep people on their toes. But yeah, LA Knight's definitely my favorite to win it. He's just got the charisma. He's got a good look to him. He's got good technical sound skills in the ring. But obviously what carries him over is definitely his mic skills. He's definitely not afraid to mix it up verbally with anybody. So he's got it all, and I'm glad that they finally have figured out that they have to strike while the iron's hot with him, because he's a little up there in age and stuff, so the window is kind of closing in, and might as well strike while his popularity is at an all-time high.
Yeah, and I would say for Jeff's question that, yeah, I definitely say he's got that organic kind of popularity that it wasn't blatantly obvious WWE wanted us to cheer for him. It just kind of happened that way. Like you said, he's just so charismatic that you almost can't not, but yeah, I'd say it was another organic kind of rise that WWE maybe didn't see coming. But I think it is safe to say he is a very heavy favorite to win Money in the Bank. I don't know if we actually have a question about that or not. I'm sure we do, so I won't go too far into it. But I would say put the smart money on him to win the briefcase for sure.
Yeah, I would go that route as well.
Oh boy. All right. What is it going to take for AEW to finally make a move to try and bring stardom into the fold for the Forbidden Door shows?
Ooh, Jesus. It's a miracle that they haven't figured out a way to include stardom on this show, because
honestly,
just the plethora of talent that's there. You know, I mean, one or two matches would have been great. I mean, to see them go up against, you know, Willow Nightingale, have her have a title defense on the show would have been great.
Yeah.
It would have been smart. I just think logistics. I think there was some confusion about work visas, and I believe from what I read, you don't need a work visa in Canada. And somebody on one end didn't know that information and didn't think that anybody would be able to get a work visa, but then found out that it's not necessary. I don't know the logistics of all that stuff, but yeah, it's very interesting that they didn't include somebody. I mean, Kairi, Tam Nakano, you know, there's a whole bunch of talent there that I'm just kind of getting introduced, you know, bits and pieces through Twitter, and then a video catch my eye, and then obviously I hop on Google or YouTube like we've been preaching for the past couple weeks.
Yeah.
And I try to, you know, educate myself. But yeah, it's very strange that they didn't try to capitalize on that, and it might be very odd to have no women's matches on a pay-per-view. That hasn't been done in years, so it's kind of odd.
Yeah, as they're kind of running down the card, I'm just like, where's the women's matches? Because that's like literally the only thing that's missing, is we need some woman's match somewhere, but I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, we've been wanting it. The fans have been wanting it. So why is it not happening? I don't know.
Yeah, and the thing is, with AEW, they are in a position where they can kind of use the Joshi wrestlers, similar to what WCW did with the Luchadors and stuff like that. Yeah. And just letting them showcase what they do to an audience that maybe 80% have never seen what these women are capable of. And they can really wow you. They deliver the goods when it comes to wrestling. And it's very high impact, sort of stiff, you know, don't blink or you'll miss something. And that sort of talent can mesh well with somebody from AEW. Like I said, Willow Nightingale, you know, Jade Cargill could definitely use the experience. Chris Statlander obviously would be great because of her power game, you know, so there's definite avenues you would be able to go through. I don't know if it's going to happen, because there's literally only an hour left of the show before Forbidden Door. You know, the build up to Forbidden Door. Well, I guess they have Rampage and Collision that they can kind of add more stuff to. But you never know at this point with AEW. They kind of like to throw stuff out there last minute to kind of get people talking.
Yeah, they do like doing that, don't they? It's a bit of a crutch, but hey, if it works, it works, I guess. But yeah, I would like to see the Joshis. I just like to see the women in general wrestling on Forbidden Door, but clearly, unless they just throw something in last minute, we're gonna have to wait till next year, sadly.
Yeah.
Which, why not? Is WWE really relying on the Money in the Bank contract to bring us an Io versus Asuka match? Io has to be the favorite to win, but why rely on the briefcase when they have so much history? I mean, Jeff makes a good point. You don't really need any extra, like, fluff and substance to it. The story kind of writes itself.
Yeah, I think the feeling you get when they're in the ring and they kind of do a stare down, there's been a couple brief instances where they've done that. You just kind of feel that tension and that anticipation for something big to happen between these two women. It is smart to rely on the history that they have with each other, being former tag team partners in Japan and things like that. Also, to kind of parallel the fact that they've both had meteoric rises in Japan before coming to the States, and they've really acclimated well in the States. All that stuff can be used to a great effect. No problem. I just think, like, if they don't do it, it won't be such a big thing, because, like, again, when you put Io and Asuka in the ring together, it's automatic, like, ooh, and I, you know, you think of the possibility.
The crowd holds a collective breath when they, like, stare at each other. They're like, oh, it's finally happening. It's finally going to happen.
Yeah, so I think you really don't have to do much to get people and you know excited about a potential matchup like that. It all depends on if EO can win the briefcase. I think that's really both sides, both men and women, they both have compelling stories built in to each individual person and the possibility of them winning the briefcase. With EO, she's obviously becoming a crowd favorite based on just her work alone and what she's able to do in the ring. I think that's what's getting people on her side. And when she can break away from Bayley and maybe there'll be some problems with damage control, I think she'll really shine. So again, something with Asuka, you know, again, strike while the iron's hot and make some money.
Please, like, God knows we've been waiting how many years for this. Like,
yeah,
it's got to happen at some point. Quit teasing us, please. But yeah, I agree. I don't think it really needs the Money in the Bank briefcase. It just kind of, like we said, writes itself. There's plenty of history there that you don't have to overcomplicate it. And I feel like if you rely too much on Money in the Bank, it's just going to kind of dull it a little bit. And so a match with those two doesn't need anything else. It's going to be perfectly fine the way it is whenever it finally happens, hopefully. So I can't wait for it to happen, but we'll see. All right, so this one I think is a rather easy question, especially for you. Is the Bloodline story the best one in WWE history?
I think about that often, you know, because you see that pop up on social media, and obviously we get the questions, and everybody knows I love the Bloodline story as much as anyone. It's so hard when you think about the rich history in wrestling. It's so easy to be like, yeah, it's the best storyline we've ever seen. That's because we're so enthralled by it. We're so invested in it, and we haven't been invested in a storyline like this. It's been, you know, 15 years or something. Like, WWE hasn't produced a storyline where people are just salivating to see what happens next. Every single episode of SmackDown ends on a cliffhanger. Yeah. The pay-per-views end on, like, a massive story arc. So, you know, I definitely would say in the past maybe 20 years, this has been the best storyline that WWE has produced. It's just so hard with the history of professional wrestling, you know, to say definitively this is the greatest storyline that we've ever seen produced. I just can't put myself in that position to kind of have somebody on the internet go, well, actually,
get yelled at.
Yeah. You know, I just don't want to get, well, actually, is phenomenal. What do you think?
I think it's also tough too. And I think this goes for pretty much just like any form of media in general, because I can come up with a couple different examples just outside of wrestling where it's like it's so new and so fresh in your memory, it's very easy to be like, well, yeah, this is like the best thing ever because it's what you remember the most. It's very tough to go back like, oh, 20 years ago I specifically remember this storyline, it was great.
Right,
it's very tough to remember. I mean, certain things you can remember until the end of time, but it's just easier to remember the little bits and pieces and details that make the storyline great because it's so fresh in your memories. So, it's so tough because, yeah, you say this and you're going to have somebody on Twitter going, no, actually, you're wrong. It's this one from whenever. And it's just like, it's subjective.
Yeah, wrestling is subjective. Like I said last week, what you may enjoy, you know, somebody else might not be fond of it, and that's okay. Now, I haven't seen anybody have anything negative to say about the Bloodline storyline.
No.
I think that's a testament, too, because WWE fans can be very fickle.
Yeah.
You know, so, but thankfully, I haven't seen anybody, you know, whether they be a hardcore fan or a casual fan, they're all sort of enthralled by this storyline and everybody wants to see what happens next with it. And I'm included. I mean, I don't miss a SmackDown. You know, I'm watching all the video clips after SmackDown goes off the air and I'm wishing that there was more. And that's, like I always said, that's what wrestling's all about, especially wrestling on TV, is giving the fan a cliffhanger and a reason to say, I need to see what happens next week. I can't even wait a full 7 days. I need to know what happens now because this is just crazy.
It's just it's very tough to find things in wrestling where there's a general consensus of people actually enjoy it, because there is always a little small minority where it's like, no, this is actually terrible because it's just gone on for too long, this and the other thing, whatever. But yeah, it's just when I think that SmackDown and the Bloodline storyline can't like one up itself, it's like every single show they find a way to do it, and it's just like they're just breaking social media viewing records left and right. It's just it's crazy. I haven't seen anything like it in a very long time, so I think it's safe to say in with a little star in recent memory, it is easily the best storyline WWE's had.
Yeah, I agree for sure.
And to follow up on that, two-parter question. Also, what if this storyline isn't actually about Roman Reigns, but it's about Jey Uso instead?
A lot of people have been pointing in that direction, and I wouldn't be upset at it because of the simple fact that this story kind of started with Jey Uso.
Yeah.
You know? It kind of happened because of him and main event Jey Uso and him getting that spot. And then we can focus on those couple matches that he had with Roman, and they were really, really good matches. You know, so it shows that he can have a viable singles career. It's just, if he's the guy to, end Roman's reign, it's just, imagine him with the world title. Can he carry that same momentum that Roman has had over, you know, 1,000 days? First initial reaction to that would be, yeah, because everybody would just be like, it makes perfect sense. Everything is full circle. Jey Uso is a champion. It's just there's a burden now with the focus being on building up title legitimacy. Obviously, with Roman having the belt for over 1,000 days, something that hasn't happened in the modern era. I think that would be an incredible amount of pressure. But Jay's charismatic, and again, those singles matches he had while his brother was on the injured list, they were some great matches. So I'm sure it can happen. There's so many ways you can go with this storyline to have like a finale that I'm just interested in seeing what they are going to come up with, because they haven't missed yet.
No, I have to agree with you. How could you just, they aren't missing. They aren't missing with anything. And it's just something that we have, like I said, not seen in a very, very long time. And it is just, it's something else.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Alrighty. And I don't know why that went away. Technology, gotta love it. All right, so Jeff's last question is, do we see Ciampa joining up with The Way, or do we see WWE going a different direction with him?
We saw that he returned Monday night on Raw, which is great to see because he's a great performer. I think he's going to join The Way initially, and then he's going to kind of be like a snake in the grass.
Yeah.
You know, I think he performs better as a heel. And I know there's a subsect of the wrestling audience that's like, don't replicate what he did with Gargano on NXT. But as a fan, and as a fan of those stories, we want to talk about compelling storylines. How would you not want to see something that dramatic play out on main roster TV? That Gargano Ciampa storyline really put NXT on the map as far as a promotion that has great in-ring work but can tell compelling storylines. This was the compelling storyline long before the Bloodline. It was just so interesting how they were able to weave everything into it, and then you'd be like, all right, I'm done with this. And they would announce another match, and you're like, I'm not going to like this match. I've already seen it. And then they would just blow the roof off that. And the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, man, when these two get on the main roster, if you can capture that shine and give it the shine of the main roster production, this is going to be amazing. I was thinking, like, they should have a tournament and you know, Gargano and Ciampa be the finals of the tournament, and the finals take place at WrestleMania, and it'll be great for NXT because they'll still be under the NXT banner. Like, that's my instant reaction, is I need to see this story translated to the main roster, giving it that main roster shine.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it was such a good feud back in the day that it completely overshadowed Aleister Black's title reign. I remember that.
It did.
Which that was a very good case of just shitty timing, because he never it still blows my mind to this day that we obviously, as we all know, love Malakai, Aleister. That man never main evented a takeover when he was champion, because it was always Ciampa and Gargano every time. So yeah, that's a big deal. It's a pretty big deal. But yeah, I hope they don't screw it up. I'm sure they won't, because again, if Triple H hopefully is still in charge, he's done it right the first time. I think he can do it right the second time.
Yeah, I think that's what people that paid attention to Black and Gold NXT can remember, is that, you know, Triple H is very good at putting stories together that work well on TV, especially for an age where, you know, we have such short attention spans with technology and social media, that, you know, to be able to capture our attention and keep it there is something that Triple H has been able to do numerous amount of times. And, you know, if given the proper amount of power and creative control, he can do some magic for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree with that one. So I think it won't be a problem. We'll just have to wait and see. Maybe Triple H has something better in mind, and we're just speculating at this point, but that's what we do here on the show. So
yep, it's all speculation.
Exactly. So that was all of Jeff's questions, so thank you again. We always appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff.
Let's go to the tweet. Go under that. All right, so next we come to Mike's questions, and Mike's first question is, after seeing Sting in that 8-man tag match from Dynamite, I absolutely do not want to see him and Jericho mixing it up. He does. Do we agree with Mike that Sting should not be wrestling? That's a tough question.
It's tough, because, like, you don't want to be disrespectful, obviously, you know, because it's Sting.
Yeah.
To what I can say is that Sting's run with AEW and what he's done in ring wise hasn't been offensive.
No.
You know, it's not like, all right, old man, clearly you need to hang it up. He can still put together a moderately good match. But again, I don't think a singles match with Jericho does anybody any favors. I mean, from a nostalgia point, it's cool. Great. They've never wrestled in WCW. They can do so in AEW. But, I mean, we all know how I feel about Jericho. It's just like, unless you're helping the young talent, and Sting's done a great job of this so far, unless you're helping put over the young talent and not trying to politic your way into stealing the spotlight, which I feel like Jericho probably has done a lot of, like,
yeah,
you know, just do the tag match and have the tag match and be done with it. Like, it's 2023, like...
yeah. I mean, you're not wrong.
We can't rely on WCW nostalgia. We just can't. That was the mistake that TNA did. You know, they relied on the WCW nostalgia, and it works for 1 week, and then people already get tired of it. You know.
Yeah.
I just don't care for Jericho. Sting, like I said, he hasn't been as offensive as Jericho. You know, so it's not like I have like this disdain for him where I don't want to see him on the screen, but it's just like, I'm at the point where it's like, move on. Let me see some of the new talent. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think the reason why Sting's whole run in AEW hasn't been horrifically offensively bad is because he's never been the main focal point of anything. He's never had to
right.
carry a feud, carry a storyline, anything. He was always most Darby doing the heavy lifting for the most part and others, but
mm-hmm. yeah.
Oh, if there's nobody there to cover that up, that's going to be a disaster. Because Jericho's good, don't get us wrong, but I don't think it would be a good idea, but if that's what Jericho wants, that's what Jericho's going to get. So, I guess that's what we're going to deal with, but, yeah, no, I wouldn't be too like, oh my God, about it. It's just kind of like, oh boy, here we go. Just hope nobody gets hurt kind of thing. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not too thrilled about it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if anything, if they're going to do it, it'd be smart to do it on the All In card. Cause yeah. obviously the UK crowd would go crazy for the nostalgia of it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Not having to have Jericho and Sting in the UK for quite some time. So if they're going to do it, I would do it on All In just to kind of, but for me, I'm looking at it. Let's do it, get it out of the way and move on.
Please. That's all we want. Ugh. Mm-hmm. How disheartening did we think it was for Dynamite with the MJF Adam Cole hot start and then closing with the Elite and the Blackpool Combat Club to not even draw 900,000 people? Mike thought it was a strong show for the most part, which I agree. Yeah, people can just be fickle like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think it would be pretty disheartening if I'm like, oh, wow, we had a really good show. And then you look at the ratings and you go, that's it. That's all we.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think, like, we look at that, like he said, the opening, the MJF Adam Cole match, phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
I love that match from start to finish. It was just great, all around great stuff. The whole show is pretty good, and then the ending was just amazing chaos. It reminded me like an old 2000s episode of SmackDown.
Yeah.
You know, where everybody's running and hitting their finisher and JR's losing his mind as the show fades to black. Yeah. You know, it reminded me a lot of that. So like I can see why people were stoked about it. The problem with the ratings is you can have that show and have that hot finish, but you have to build on that momentum. It's all about momentum. You can't just hark on one show and be like, oh, well, this show didn't hit the numbers, but man, it got a lot of people talking. So that means that your next show that you deliver has to be another one that gets people talking. This is why the Bloodline storyline works so well, is because yeah. by the end of whatever they're doing, it's got you talking and it's got you wanting to see more. That's the key point that I always try to hammer in various episodes that we've done. I've already said it on this episode. You have the way to build that momentum is to give the audience something that says, I got to tune in next week because this is crazy. You know?
Yeah.
So I think they did it. I thought it was phenomenal. You know, the Eddie Kingston coming out of nowhere. I definitely want to see what his involvement, if there is any involvement in Forbidden Door. Then you had Takeshita. Then you had, well, Ospreay come out. It was just madness. And it was, again, it was a great show. If you watch the show in its entirety, and it's one of those shows that you're like, man, this is the type of Dynamite. This is the type of AEW product that I need. That's going to want me to stay and pay attention to whatever they have coming next. I think also the problem is too, as far as like ratings go, they only count if you have like a cable TV hookup. For me personally, I use streaming. I use Hulu Live, and I don't believe, you know, if you use YouTube TV, Hulu Live, or Sling or anything like that, I don't think any of those numbers count towards the ratings.
Yeah, that'd be a bit of a problem then.
Yeah, I think that's why you see WWE focus on their social media numbers. And
yeah.
they like to talk about the records that they're breaking on social media. Not only yeah. that, but the records that they break in the small markets that they have live shows. They don't focus much on, oh, Raw did this number, you know, or anything like that to kind of to kind of get people going. So, again, it's just AEW has to learn how to, if ratings are important, which to a degree they should be, if ratings are important, they have to figure out, we have this one show here, we need to build the momentum to our next show and keep building that momentum so that none of our shows, people are going to feel like they're all can't miss and they have to tune in and see what goes down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all about the consistency. And at the same time, like you kind of said, you also have to focus on the more important things, because sometimes the cable's not always the big indicator of, oh my God, we're doing so well, guys, because cable TV. Yeah. Cause not everybody has cable. I do, but like you say, you don't. So out of the two of us, one only counts. So, and they also, I think they also too don't take into account maybe like the recordings, the DVRs, you know, all that. So it's like people are still watching. It's just maybe not live, especially when Collision's numbers kind of dip a little bit. It'll be like, well, most of the time people have stuff to do on Saturday night. So they're not just going to be like, hey guys, sorry, I can't make it out tonight. I can't go to dinner. I have to like stay home and watch wrestling. Yeah. That's not going to happen. So, even if you don't get them on the live, like the live broadcast, you may get them as a recording. You may get them as like Twitter, like you say, Twitter interaction, social media impressions. It's like, there's more to things than just the cable, I believe.
Yeah.
But
it's all pivoting to 2023. You know, you have to evolve with the times.
Yeah.
You can't just stay stuck in your own ways. You kind of have to go where the people go and kind of grab their attention that way.
Yeah, exactly. All righty. So we're back to the Bloodline again. You'll be happy about this. Do the Usos beat Roman and Solo?
That Money in the Bank?
I got a hot take here. No, they're not going to.
Okay.
Because that'd be way too easy. So right when things start getting hot, you're just going to end it by having them win. Like, no, you got to kind of do the back and forth a little bit, like Roman and Solo maybe like cheat to win, or you know, like barely escape with the win and just extend it further, because clearly they know how to extend this feud for months upon months upon months. So I don't think keeping it going, people aren't clamoring it for it to be over pretty much. So why would you just want to end it immediately as soon as like it gets like super, oh shit, here we go, this is like the heavy stuff. So no, I think it'd be way too soon for them to win. You gotta climb the mountain a little bit. Gotta have some type of drama with this aspect of the story. Obviously, we've had plenty of drama in the storyline alone, but in this chapter, you can't make it a short chapter. You gotta make it long and worthwhile and worth watching.
Yeah, I'm totally down with that. Like, creatively, this has been so good that I'm like, as a fan, I'm just like, well, you haven't missed in the 3 years you've been putting this together.
Yeah.
So who am I to be like, you need to do this and stay away from this? I'm more of like, whatever you do, I'm probably on board with, because you haven't made a mistake yet in telling the story.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's just like, I wonder if we'll start to see the crack between Roman and Solo.
Yeah.
You know, that's one route you can go. The crack between Roman and Solo, and that extends that. This whole thing has swerved me so many times.
Just when especially, you think you know, you don't know.
Yeah, I it proves that I don't know shit.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there watching SmackDown, and Jay is just running his brother down, you know, just running him through the gamut. You were the MVP. You were the prom king. You were the it guy. You were this, you were that. And then, you know, I'm thinking, oh man, he's going to leave his brother in the dust.
Yeah.
And then he goes, you know, and you're out. And then he has that little pause. And then I'm like, oh, man.
And you, I could imagine, I could just have imagined you going like, no, please don't do this. Like,
this whole storyline has been a series of me going, oh no. Like,
yeah.
The entire time with everything that just happens, my initial reaction is, oh no. Like,
uh-huh.
it's so real. Not a lot of people are talking about the fact that Roman Reigns is a master manipulator. Mm-hmm. He's a gaslighter. Yeah. He's if you think about it, he's just an awful human being. Like to put his family what he's put them through, just to be the guy at the top of the mountain. It's just crazy. But as far as like what happens at Money in the Bank, it's just hard because like what do the winners gain from this if they win the match? What do they gain? Bragging rights, you know. Roman could say, "I told you so. You guys are nothing without me." And then on the flip side, you know, if the Usos beat Solo and Roman, that kind of catapults them. I already think of them as the greatest tag team in WWE history.
Oh yeah.
Just the caliber of matches, the storyline, the title reigns, the feuds that they've had with people like the New Day and things like that. To me, like, they're the greatest tag team in WWE history. Mm-hmm. And beating Roman and Solo could definitely catapult them into a new stratosphere. It's just a matter of where do you go from there, you know? And that's the most interesting part. Again, they haven't missed. Every time you go, well, where do they go from here? They always add a new layer, and you're like, shit, they got me again. Like, yeah. you think it's over,
it's not over.
It's not over, you know? And so me as a fan, whether they win or lose, I'm so invested. I just want to see what happens.
Yeah, it's like we said, just when you think it's over, they pull you back in every time.
Every single time.
We fall for it every single time, and we're just like, why do we keep getting played by this? But they're just that good, I guess. Alrighty, so what are our thoughts on Collision's debut show? Mike thought it was quite solid. I agree. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was a solid wrestling show. It flowed very nicely. You know, I don't think there was any backstage stuff. It was mainly focused on what happened in the ring. I thought it was a smart idea. I didn't see a Punk promo opening the show. And obviously that promo, it's Punk. So at the least, he's going to deliver a great promo that'll have people talking for a little bit. Again, the matches were great. The only thing I didn't like was Wardlow losing.
Yeah, you
know,
God.
I know we have a question about that, so I'll save my thoughts. But I felt like that was maybe a down moment in the show. Everything else was great. I particularly loved the women's tag match with Willow and Sky Blue. Getting the win. For me, it's like I look at women's wrestling, especially in AEW and WWE too, and NXT. There seems to be. Like this epidemic when it comes to women's tag team wrestling, where they'll do the spot where someone comes in for the hot tag, and they'll do that spot where they'll run in and then start throwing forearms back and forth.
Yeah.
But it just comes up like a lame spot because they're slow getting to the spot, and then they're throwing these half-ass elbow forearms. And for me, I was like, I'm watching that match on Collision. I'm like, finally, Sky Blue goes in there, and she goes in there like she's on fire, and she's throwing those forearms in there like, you know, she's pretty good. Like, you're seeing someone that's pretty good, that's only going to get better with more experience in the ring, and she's only like 22, 23. So, like...
yes, I know. Thank you.
She's got a whole great career, but again... obviously, everybody's focused on how Punk did in the main event. I thought Punk did great. You know, his pacing was good. He had some snaps when he was throwing his strikes. His step up knees were hitting on point. He didn't look gassed. And obviously, they had that big moment with when Samoa Joe finally came in, and Joe just went to town on him. Like, oh, you want to complain about high chops? I'm going to chop the shit out of you. Like, you know, those are some brutal shots, but I think it was a great show. Again, it's all about that momentum. Can they build upon that momentum? Now that people seeing Punk in the ring and seeing Punk finally cut a promo after the All Out scuffle and things like that, how do they build to make it compelling? And I know we probably have some questions about, you know, the situation between the Young Bucks and CM Punk, so I won't get too deep into that because I have some thoughts about that.
Yeah, we'll save it for that one for sure. All right, so who exactly are the heels and the faces in the Asuka, Bianca Belair, and Charlotte Flair triangle? I feel like Bianca still has to be like a good guy, but because you could absolutely see where she's coming from in that point where I did everything right and she just waltzes in here and just, you know, gets her shot. So I feel like Charlotte's still like the bad guy because it's Charlotte, because why wouldn't it be? Asuka, I don't know, I guess. Somewhere in the middle. I don't really know.
It's tough with Asuka because she's so cool. Like you want to see her, you know, perform and do her thing. She's great at what she does. And I think if you have to set a dynamic where someone's the good guy, someone's the bad guy, it's really tough to put Asuka in that position because she can do everything the bad guy does, but she makes it seem so cool. I'm a big fan of anybody using a poison mist. You know, I think that's just cool. And, you know, the fact that she figured out a way to use it like on her fingers and finally dethrone Bianca Belair, I thought that was genius. But again, she's playing the part of a heel. I think the real heel in this dynamic from a fan standpoint has got to be Charlotte Flair.
Oh, yeah.
Again, because like you said, she just kind of waltzes in and cuts the line, and then when you call her out on it, she's like, "I am the line." And
just like that picture we posted last week.
Yeah, it's like, what the shit? Like, you know, how can anybody allow this to happen?
Yeah, why does this keep happening every time? Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm waiting to see Bianca kind of break down that way. Yeah. Just to be like go into like a manic episode where she's just like, why does she keep getting away with this? Like, this can't keep happening. I honestly think because we have, I believe the match is next week, is it, between Asuka and Charlotte? I think whenever that match happens, Bianca Belair is going to play a part in it in terms of, you know, maybe Charlotte's not going to win. I think everybody's looking at it. It's like, oh, it's Charlotte, so she's definitely going to win. I don't think she wins, and I think Bianca Belair plays a part as to why Charlotte doesn't win this time around.
I love that we have the brain cells still, because I was going to say that Bianca cost Charlotte the spot and be like, see, this is what you get when you jump the line. You get screwed over, just like you screwed us over. So there you go.
Yeah. And then it'll be compelling to see if Charlotte can deliver, you know, a classic performance when there's really no prize on the line except bragging rights.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's just a mess that I feel like we always get into every few months when Charlotte comes back. And it's just, I just hope Asuka finally beats her, because I feel like that's like her Achilles heel, Charlotte.
Yeah, I still don't think Charlotte should have been the one to break Asuka's streak.
No, not at all. You know, it's no. Yeah. Anyway. funny that we mentioned this a little bit earlier. Wardlow once again loses the TNT title. Mike would like to know, does he have heat on him or something? It sure feels like it, doesn't it? Because goddamn, it
feels like he's in the doghouse every time he gets this title.
Because that's like what, the third time he's lost it now?
The third or fourth time. It's crazy.
Like, if you have to go above two, that's not good.
And it's above two in the stretch that he's had it. It's just insane. Like, he hasn't been able to have a legitimate run with this title. And they kind of neutered him.
You know? Yeah, a little bit. Because it's like,
they
You can't take him seriously. The war dog. No, you can't take him seriously at all.
They've neutered the war dog.
Oh God, is that the title of the episode?
Probably. Probably is going to be the title, but okay. I was just perplexed. I was almost shocked. Like,
yeah, I guess my reaction was more like, seriously, again, like.
And the thing about it too, it's like, as far as like the fans, this is not new information coming from the fans as to why we're so confused as to what's going on with Wardlow. He has the makings of a great talent. You know, he has the look, the power, the moves. The Powerbomb Symphony was getting over organically, and you give him the title, which is great. And then you take it off. Then you give it back to him. Take it off. And then you give it back to him. It's just like, I mean, what is going on with Wardlow? Like Mike said, he's got to have some heat with somebody in the office. Maybe Jericho doesn't like him.
I don't know.
But ever since he kind of stepped away from MJF, he lost the luster. Like he lost what made him interesting. And again, losing in this fashion. The one upside is Christian's taking credit for the win.
Yeah, full credit.
And he looks like he's taking the title as far as credit and won't let Luchasaurus get any shine with the title, even though Luchasaurus was the one that pinned Wardlow. So in terms of a story, I'm okay with that, but again, at the expense of Wardlow, who's already had multiple start stop pushes.
Yeah,
fans have been pointing it out for months. So you would think if the fans have been pointing it out,
stop.
Somebody in the office would look at it and go, maybe they're right. Maybe we have been kind of starting and stopping with this guy. We need to do something substantial. But no, they do exactly what we've been pointing out, and it's just like,
yeah, no, let's keep going.
Yeah, it's what did this guy do to someone?
I don't know. Like, did he spill coffee on someone in the back? Like,
ah, my God,
what is happening? I don't get it. It's confusing.
I don't either. That was probably my one downside from the episode of Collision, which is that, and that match was pretty good. The spot happened and he won. I'm like, really? They took the belt off of him again?
Yeah, maybe just keep him away from the title for a little bit. Just because.
Yeah, it's not doing anything for him.
No, clearly it's not. Like, yikes. Oh, here's a fun one. Why is Paul Heyman still carrying the old titles after Roman got the new one? Mm-hmm. I don't know, to make him look more important, I guess?
To me, it kind of came off as like Roman Reigns is Thanos.
Yeah, you know? And it's just like rubbing in your face, like, these are all mine, like, screw you.
You gotta admit, it is visually appealing when you see all three of the titles stacked, you know, nice and neat behind Roman. Like,
yeah, all the shinies.
It does make Roman look like a badass.
I think it's just a little cool.
Yeah, of course. But you think about it. If you think about who Roman Reigns is, again, this master manipulator, this gaslighter, this guy that is full of his own ego.
Yeah.
It kind of makes sense that he's carrying around belts that don't mean anything anymore.
Exactly, because to him, it's like, see, this is just more important stuff for me. I got all the gold, see? That's a Roman thing to do.
Yeah, it's definitely a Roman thing to do.
Yeah, so I think it's just more to inflate the ego a little bit, make it look nicer with all the sparklies and shinies, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a reason for it.
Yeah, I think it's just to inflate his ego.
Exactly. Do we think there will ever come a time in wrestling where AI could be scripting promos? I hope not. I really hope not.
Yeah, this AI stuff is it's very divisive.
It's getting out of control. It's insane.
It's like everything is AI now.
I know. This could be AI at some point. We might not even have a job anymore.
Yeah, and you see, like, even WWE is kind of getting into it. Like, they'll post up, oh, ChatGPT came up with the 10 greatest title reigns or whatever, and they'll post it on social media. So, like, they're clearly, you know, have their finger on, I guess, what's hip. But AI is very, very divisive.
Yeah.
Amongst people in, like, any sort of creative circle that you're in, whether you're in arts or anything like that. It definitely won't be good. It's never been good when they've done scripted promos for a person that can't figure out how to make a scripted promo sound like it came from themselves.
Yes.
You
yes,
know?
Exactly.
So, like, and they've done scripted promos ever since they switched over to being PG. You know, it was just, it's so, in a sense, scripted promos have been always been around. I just think we're in an age now where the fan can kind of see if it's genuine or if it's just someone reading off of a piece of paper. So that's why I feel like, and this is just me, but I feel like maybe they've gone away from the scripted promo just a little bit to let some of these guys, because could you imagine LA Knight delivering a scripted promo?
It just wouldn't work.
He's one of those talents where, like, you give him the bullet points and you have to let him run with it, you know? Because that's the only way it works. So I don't dive too deep into it because it's just not my type of deal. Like, I don't see the appeal of it. To me, it's kind of scary. Like, oh man, the robots are gonna be taking over.
It could turn into the Terminator real quick. This could be Skynet we're dealing with all over again. No thank you. It takes the human element out of it. Like, some of the best promos in wrestling history are the ones that come straight from the soul, not like bullet points. So you do have an AI do that, you're gonna get rid of that rather quickly. And no, I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, could you imagine having the AI back in the territory days and and hard times from Dusty Rhodes ends up being like an AI promo? Like,
that would be
insane. Like, we don't need it.
No, I'm good. I'm good. We don't need that. Please. Yikes. No. And all right, so I have to pull this back up again for context because we were given some homework to look at for this last question. Do we think Eric Bischoff has a point? Not necessarily that he's right, but that he has a point with his comments to Ariel Helwani about Tony Khan and AEW being a hobby for Tony. So he pretty much was again talking to Ariel and kind of sort of pretty much stated that, you know, if you have like all this money and you got all the stuff and things and whatever, Bischoff's point of view, he just thinks that with some of the like booking decisions and the creative decisions and whatnot, it just kind of, especially with the whole CM Punk thing, he kind of thinks that like, yeah, to Tony, this is just kind of a hobby. It's not like he's taking it seriously, I would suppose, would be the insinuation. Because if it's just a hobby, you don't really care too much. So I'm like, ooh, yikes. Well, that's a good way to create some controversy there, don't we think? Do we think he has a point? Maybe sort of, but not really. Because I feel like, have some of the booking decisions and creative decisions been head scratching? Absolutely. We've talked about it ad nauseum on the show. Could he have handled the Punk situation better? Probably. I think it also comes from the fact that Bischoff says if it was up to him, he would have fired Punk. Like, this wouldn't have even been an issue. It wouldn't have brought him back, whatever. So yeah, I could see how in Eric's point of view, not other Eric, not you, that, well, if I would have done this differently and he didn't do that, then clearly he doesn't think a certain way like I do, which is like fine, right. But you think that'd be a little insulting, don't you think? Where I would like to think Tony's just trying to do his best to have like a good show and to have someone come around and be like, yeah, but do you really care though? You have all this money. It's just like, this isn't really like your job. This is just like something you do for funsies. Like,
yeah,
I'd be a little mad. I'd be really insulted if I were a Tony.
And I know, because there was a thing that happened during the first StarCast, the very first one before the very first All In. Yeah. And they had, I forgot who they were roasting, but they were roasting somebody. And, you know, the whole point of a roast is you come in, before you roast the main guy, you roast everybody else on the dais and then the audience or whatever. And somebody called Tony Khan a money mark. And he did not like that. He actually left the show. He took great offense to being called a money mark. So I think that's just, since the inception of AEW, that's sort of the thing that Tony Khan has had to deal with.
Yeah.
Just being, probably being looked at as a guy who's just in it because, again, they think it's a hobby. But I think you brought up a good point in the sense that if it's not something that Eric Bischoff would have done, then it's a clear mistake.
Yeah.
As if Eric Bischoff, of all people, is the fucking litmus of what's a mistake in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
He hasn't bundled anything he's ever done in professional wrestling.
Kind of so, the pot calling the kettle black on that one, I think.
Yeah, like, yeah. So give me a break, Bischoff.
Yeah.
For this guy, I don't care how much money he has. The amount of money that goes into obviously paying your talent, paying your crew, putting on this production, and you think his dad is just gonna let him waste money like that?
No.
Like, no, there's no such thing as a stupid billionaire. Like,
no.
You know, like,
no.
they don't waste money. You know, if it wastes the dollar, that's putting them in their minds, already putting them in a predicament. So, like, to say that Tony Khan does all this, he pays his talent. I've heard from multiple people that he goes above and beyond, different from what WWE does, where he takes care of all of the talent's travel arrangements and hotel arrangements, where in WWE, that is your responsibility as a talent, and that comes out of your pay.
Yeah.
In AEW, Tony Khan takes care of that. So, just to put that in perspective and say, well, this guy just does it because he likes wasting money, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. Like, nobody does that. And, you know, it's not like he looks at it and goes, well, not a lot of people showed up to that show. Oh, well, you know, we'll get them next time. No, he pivots and he tries to do things to get people on board with the product. So, yeah, it's just crazy to disregard somebody's passion, because Tony Khan has a passion,
yes,
for professional wrestling. You hear stories about him being in the ECW audience in Philadelphia when he was like 13, 14 all the time. You know, before AEW had it, he had a great relationship with people within the WWE. So he's been a massive fan. And of course, if I had as much money as Tony Khan did, you best believe I'm going to take a crack at, you know, being a wrestling promoter and trying to put on shows. And so, again, just to say, oh, it's just a hobby, because he's not doing things that I would have done if I were in charge. It's just a misjudgment of character.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the fact that he paid for Mark Davis's knee surgery, and Aussie Open wasn't even signed to AEW at the time. Like, what boss does that? What boss would do that and think that, oh, well, that might be, like, you know, put us back on money, but no, he genuinely cares, or he wouldn't be doing this. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Like,
you know, he cares about his people. I mean, look at what he's done for Amanda Huber. Brody Lee's wife. She came in and she was just kind of like a stagehand, and now she just got promoted to being part of the production team.
Yeah.
You know, that's because he sees value in people more than just the dollar sign, you know? Exactly. And of course he's made mistakes, and the whole punk situation was a mistake. And then you look at every other scrum interview with MJF, and you could just see Tony Khan about to have a nervous breakdown because of what things that MJF says. This guy goes through the ringer, you know? So I give Tony Khan a ton of credit because he doesn't have that stature like of Vince McMahon. So with that, like, I bet a bunch of people talent wise in AEW probably go in there like, oh, I could probably get one up over this guy because he's such a nice guy, you know, and things like that. He's very much a yes man, you know, and that's so like, on the good side, it shows that he's human. He cares about people. He wants everyone to succeed. On the bad side is you can't be a yes man for everyone, or else they're just going to take advantage of you.
Yeah. As we've seen before, that does not work well in the wrestling business at all.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So give him like 5 to 10 years, and then you'll see the calluses of running this business sort of form, and then he'll be more of an asshole like Vince McMahon.
See all the gray hairs that develop because of it. Honestly. So that was all of Mike's questions. So thank you, as always.
Thank you, Mike.
And let's move on to Mom's questions. So Mom, thank you, as always. Why does WWE waste valuable TV time with Logan Paul? She gets it, but also, ugh. Yeah, I kind of have to agree because, I don't. He just draws the influencers in, I guess.
Yeah, the thing is, we're going to sit here and we're gonna shit all over it, and this kid's going to go out there and do one thing, and then we're just going to go, fuck.
Yeah, right.
was good. That was good. It has no business being that good, but it was good. So, like, I'm to the point where I get it because, like, he hasn't done a lot, but what he's done has been impactful.
Yeah.
It's just, I think, because of the influencer thing and the fact that he doesn't really run the gamut, you know, and obviously he's playing a heel, which is not hard for him to do because he came into this whole deal as a heel person. You know, I hadn't heard one good thing about Logan Paul before his WWE run. So he kind of just leans into his real life persona. I think that's just why people don't really vibe with him. And the fact that he's not running the road. He's not in there taking the bumps and things like that. So if I'm a WWE talent, I'm still looking at it as like, this guy's kind of taking my spot. Yeah, he's getting a bunch of influencer eyes and kids that are addicted to YouTube. He's getting a bunch of their eyes on the product. But if we talk about attention spans, those people have worse attention spans than wrestling fans.
Yeah.
If you don't grab them within the first 10, 15 seconds of a YouTube video, you're toast.
Yeah, it's like, over.
It's figure out a new game plan because YouTube is not working for you. So he gets the eyeballs. I would love to see the data of like how his presence affects, you know, the rating, if like a stronger rating comes in when he's in the ring.
His
social media metrics, because again, he does all these things that like, he'll wow you. He'll wow the shit out of you, no matter how many matches he's been in. So, like, his social media numbers are obviously going to do great. So, from a financial standpoint, he's a moneymaker from WWE. So, like, that's, like, a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, unfortunately, as much as we hate to admit it, it just be like that sometimes. Yeah. Unfortunately. Whatever, we have to say it begrudgingly, but yeah, whatever. All right. What was our favorite match from Collision?
Favorite match from Collision? What was yours?
Oh, the women's match. It was just fun.
Very good.
It was just fun to watch. Yeah.
And I like that they gave the win, you know, in Chicago and everything like that.
Yeah,
that was pretty big. For me, it was definitely Andrade and Buddy Matthews.
That was a close second.
Yeah, those guys went out there and they did work. Like, they were throwing some shots.
Yeah,
and you know Andrade's feeling it when he throws that fake front kick into the back elbow.
Yeah,
and he nailed Buddy with it.
And so Buddy did a good job selling that knee too, where it's like, oh, did he actually get hurt or did he just? That was a very nice slip up, but he made it look like it was, oh, the knee just gave out. That's why he missed it. But
yeah, and not to mention his work on Andrade's arm.
Yeah,
made Andrade look like he was vulnerable and in a state of injury and things like that. So that definitely added to the match. So for me, like I said, a collision, as far as like the in-ring work, everything was great. You know, even the in-ring work, for the Wardlow match up until the finish was great too. So again, it's just building upon that momentum, making sure that collision doesn't fall into the trap of just being another Rampage or another AEW Dark, you know, where it's just like throwaway matches and things that nobody cares about. Make it your, if Dynamite is the A show, you want to make Collision the definite B show.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So yeah, I think episode one was fantastic. You know, even Eric Bischoff loved episode one. So as much as we shat on Eric Bischoff this episode, he did enjoy Collision, which was a surprise. So hopefully episode two of Collision will be just as good.
I hope so. I just wish Buddy would have won, though. I feel like that was my one should have, but...
Yeah, I that would have been... Honestly, I thought the same, but in the same breath, it's like... if Buddy would have won, it would have made Andrade look bad losing his first match of his comeback, you know?
We're also just biased, so that doesn't really help either.
Yeah, but the one bright spot is we probably are going to get something involving Andrade and House of Black.
Which I'm okay with.
Due to what happened at the end of that match. And it's great too, because if you think about it, there is some connection between the two, because Malakai is married to Zelina, who was Andrade's first manager when he came to WWE. So there's that connection between the two. They know each other very well.
Well, and Malakai beat Andrade for the title back in NXT.
That's a very
good point. Take over New Orleans. So,
yeah, they got some history with each other.
Got some beef.
They got some beef, so it'll be good. And then you could build up. I would love to see Andrade go against Brody.
Oh, Jesus.
I would love to see Brody in a couple singles matches. Now that we got a singles match out of Buddy, let's get a singles match out of Brody and see what he can do on his own and kind of be that menacing monster. It'll just do wonders for House of Black. Which is one of the bright spots of having this second show with having Collision, is that you give more opportunities to people like House of Black, who are kind of struggling to get seen on Dynamite.
Exactly. I agree. We need to see more. Then again, any House of Black segment's good for us. We like that, but we want to see more.
Yeah.
All right. Bianca's promo was wow. She did not hold back at all.
Yeah. Oof. That's the good of Bianca, is whenever she has a microphone, everything just seems so real.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And
it wasn't that hard to like believe it either. Like, if anybody was in her position, they'd be pissed too. So it makes sense.
Right. Yeah. It's she has a legitimate gripe. You know, she did everything that management asked of her to do. She lost her title graciously and she knew she was in line for a rematch, and then here comes Charlotte just bumping everybody out and going, no, I want the title. And like you said, anybody in that position would have reacted the same exact way. So that's the goodness of Bianca Belair, is that she really isn't a character. She isn't a gimmick.
No.
It's just, she's just damn good at doing this wrestling thing.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really argue with it. And I still think she's going to interfere in that title match. Just,
I think so too.
Just because. Well, hopefully before, not after, because if she doesn't show up during the match, I have a bad feeling Charlotte's going to win, but I would like to be wrong, but we've seen this movie too many times before.
At this point, it'll actually do more positives for Charlotte to lose a match.
Yeah, God forbid, right? Like,
you know, like people actually say, well, oh man, she actually does lose a match.
She is human after all.
Like she does have some kinks in the armor. You know, she can't just come back and win titles like she's always done, you know? So it's like a loss will probably actually do better in the fans' eyes.
I think so, but we'll see if management agrees. I hope they do, but I wouldn't put it past them to just go with Old Faithful again, as always. Ugh. Moving on, before that turned into a whole rant. You kind of touched on this a little bit earlier. In Mom's opinion, the Adam Cole MJF match was really good. I would agree. It was very good.
Yeah.
So good. That ending was so good too. Like, and it made sense.
The ending didn't even register. It took about 30 seconds for it to register, because I'm looking at it and I'm like, did this guy pull off his own screw job? Because he needs to do a WWE thing that he needed to do a screw job. And then 30 seconds later, I'm like, oh, time limit. And I'm like, that's genius. Like, you know, like the match was so good, you completely forget that there's a time limit on this thing. And they did so much.
Yeah. Like,
but everything was logical. I mean, MJF's arm work of Adam Cole was brilliant.
Yeah.
They were doing some really gnarly spots with, like, the tombstone on the apron.
Oh,
the table spot, you know, where MJF hits that elbow drop through the table. It was just a really, really well-constructed match. And the ending was just perfect, because there was nobody watching that match that, you know, a minute before it was over was like, oh man, hopefully they're going to adhere to the time. You know, nobody was thinking that.
No.
Nobody, because everybody was focused on the match, that when that bell rang, it was like, is this a screw job? What is going on?
Yeah.
Did MJF screw Adam Cole? And then they're like, no, it's just a time limit draw. We're adhering to the rules. You know, like, you guys want us to so bad. So it was just brilliant. MJF denying Adam Cole an extra 5 minutes was just beautiful stuff. And it's one of those things. That is one of those things where you're like, you want to see what happens next. How can Adam Cole get that match that he so deserves?
And now imagine what's going to happen when they have a rematch with the title on the line.
Exactly.
I can't wait. I can't wait for it to happen. Alrighty, what match is going to be the best on Forbidden Door?
I gotta go Danielson Okada.
Yeah.
That match to me is just, that's a hardcore wrestling fan's dream right there, is just to see those two guys go at it. And I hope it's going to be tough, because in New Japan, they kind of construct their shows and stuff like that, where those title matches go on for 40, 45 minutes, close to an hour.
Yeah.
Whereas I wonder if AEW is willing to give them, you know, 45 minutes to a 60-minute Broadway to put off the typical Okada match. That's my only concern, is like, I hope it gets a lot of time so that way they can build up the drama, the anticipation, and do the New Japan style, where it's like, you really have to beat the hell out of these dudes to get a victory, you know. And I think it's great the way AEW's handling Danielson, where they don't have him in every single match. You know, it's sort of like become like a special occasion, which is great for his health, you know. I think giving him that time in between matches ensures that he can deliver a top level performance which I'm sure he's going to do at Forbidden Door. So that's my match of the evening. I'm really bummed that we're not going to see Kenta versus CM Punk.
Yeah.
I thought that was a definite money match.
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing that plagues this company for me is like, does nobody want to make some money?
Yeah, no, like, apparently not. Like, goddamn. You know,
because according to the reports, Kent is the one that doesn't want to have the match. He's the kind of being the one to put the stop sign to it. So I'm interested in seeing what is his reasoning. But you look at the situation with Punk and the Elite, you know?
Yeah.
This is prime center cut beef of a storyline to make some money. So it's like,
why?
If I'm Tony Khan, I'm fuming hot right now because of all the talk about ratings being in the dumpster, not selling tickets, not having anything outside of All In that's going to really bring in people. This story could definitely pop the ratings, definitely sell some tickets. And you mean to tell me you can't get these group of grown-ass men in a room where they can hash this out, apologize, shake hands, and figure out a way to make money?
Yeah.
Like, are we dealing with children here? So like, if I'm Tony Khan, that's the one thing I am hot. Like, I am pissed off about that. You know, and according to Punk, he said he's tried to make amends with the Elite, and he's met with lawyers telling him not to contact anybody within that party. And it's just like, really? Like, this could be a monumental shift of at least putting AEW back on the board as viable competition to WWE. Because right now, in terms of product, WWE is running away with things.
Yeah, they need to step it up.
You know, and like I said, everybody's talking about ratings and ticket sales and buy rates and things like that. And as performers, you can't figure out a way to make money.
Yeah, like what are we doing here? Like,
what are we doing here? Like, if anything, that points to Bischoff's point about this being a hobby, but I don't think it's a hobby for Tony Khan. I think it's a hobby for everybody else around him.
Maybe. It sure looks like it sometimes.
Yeah, it maybe feels like Eric Bischoff's attention to who's making this a hobby is misdirected. It shouldn't be directed at Tony Khan. It should really be directed at his talent and his EVPs.
Man.
And Punk.
Hot take.
It is kind of a hot take, but like you look at, again, these are grown men.
Yeah.
Grown men who had a little bit of a scuffle. You know, nobody got seriously hurt or anything like that. Not that there's an excuse there or anything, but the fact that we can't sit in a room and say, man, that was really, really stupid. I'm sorry for my part in it. Let's not try to do that again. And then once you square that away, and you go, guys, you know, this obviously, you say, all you have to say is the Elite and CM Punk are going to be in the same building as each other. Just advertise it as that. And that instantly, the ratings, you're going to see an uptick in ratings. It's just, nobody wants to make money.
Yeah, it's just like, what's happening? Yeah. I don't know. And then Mom's last comment is something, of course, we talk about multiple times a show, multiple times every time. What else can be said about the Bloodline storyline? You can't. It's just...
You can't.
Yeah. You can't say anything else that we've already said.
Yeah, it's just scary... Scary to think eventually this has to end. And
you're dreading the day, aren't you?
I'm dreading the day because they've built this up in such a way that like you have to end it on a climax that's just gonna blow people out of water.
Yeah.
Not only that, but then afterwards, after the earthquake of the bloodline dissipates, where do you go next? Like,
yeah.
Where's your next cash cow? You know, where's the next, you know, who's going to be bringing you in those ratings? Because the story is what's selling these ratings.
Exactly.
You know, so it's like, who's next to carry that mantle? I don't envy WWE's creative team because they're in that position where they've done such a great job.
Yeah.
That it's just like one mistake could blow this thing out of water. And then the ending, whenever the ending is coming, because we don't know when the ending is coming. I sincerely thought the ending was going to be at WrestleMania, and I was completely wrong, and I was told wrong by Roman Reigns. He said, "You guys think this is the end? We're only in the second, third inning of this entire thing." And it's like, shit, I don't think my heart can
no
more.
No.
So it's just like whatever the end is, I hope it's a good one, and I hope they can build upon that for the next phase of WWE storytelling, because it's incredible. Like, it's like what the kids have been saying on Twitter. This is cinema. This is a movie.
Yeah,
you know, it fits that bill perfectly, because you have internal family struggle, again, led by a master manipulator, a gaslighter who has to be at the top of the mountain, being the person controlling, pulling all the strings. And it's crazy how it's played out. SmackDown was just insane. That double super kick to end the show, where like even a defiant Reigns is like, "How can you do this to me? You're supposed to stand in line with me." And he goes to approach them, and they double super kicked him, and he looked like he got shot out of a cannon.
Yeah.
He
was on the ground.
Yeah, he was. It was just. It's
so good.
It's perfect. It's always been my dream to work in the creative aspect of WWE, but even I couldn't have come up with something as good as that. I'd be the person like non-contributing to the group, but still getting the A+.
Yeah, you're like, "Well, we did something, guys. We did it."
Yeah. It's like, whatever you guys are doing, it works. So who am I to be like, "No, let's do this"? I don't know shit, man.
Yeah, honestly, like we keep saying, just when you think it's over and just when you think they're done, they pull us in back in every time.
It's insane.
I know. It's just, it's too much in the best way possible. It's too much. Alrighty, so that was all of Mom's questions and comments. So, Mom, thank you as always. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mom.
And we are finishing the night with Jack's questions. And his first one is a rather obvious question. Should LA Knight win the men's Money in the Bank? He says, yeah. Yeah, he should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. he's definitely, I put my money on LA Knight. The good thing about this sans Logan Paul is like anybody else that wins this briefcase, you're like, okay, I'm on board with it, because they've done this thing where like everybody in the Money in the Bank has never held a world championship before.
Yeah.
So it's fresh faces, it's somebody new. I hope they don't put the briefcase on Logan Paul. That would be,
please don't.
You know, my money is on LA Knight. He's just too popular. The reaction he gets when his music hits and he comes out, you know, he's going to say something crazy. And it's just going to go over well. It's prime time right now to put the briefcase on him and see where he can go with it.
See, I feel like it's going to be one of those where Logan Paul this is how I feel like it's going to end, just because we've seen this many times before where it looks like Logan's about to win and everyone's like booing and just like, "Oh God, here we go. This is like our worst nightmare." And then like LA just shows up out of nowhere and takes it. And then everyone's like, "Oh, thank God you saved us." I feel like that's going to probably end up happening.
I like that. I would definitely go that route.
We'll see if we talk that into existence, coming in the bank. Mm-hmm. But definitely. Hey, okay, we are good at doing that sometimes. So, but yeah, I do think LA Knight should win the the briefcase because he's just the obvious choice.
I agree.
And Jack thinks the WWE's done a good job making a lot of the women's storylines come together for the Money in the Bank match, because you got the Damage Control tension, which is hurting my soul. Zoe Stark and Trish Stratus teaming up, and Becky somehow being an underdog again. Yeah, this is probably, and Zelina Vega. You can't forget Zelina too. I feel like this is definitely, I think they've done a good job with both ladder matches. To, you can make an argument for literally anybody in this match, like anyone, some more than others, obviously, but there isn't one where it's like, oh God, why would they win it? It's a very eclectic group for the women, especially, but I feel like that can create some very interesting situations. And like Jack said, there are so many different storylines going on in this match that you want to pay attention, because it's like, okay, so is Damage Control going to do something? Is Becky going to get one up on Zoe and Trish? Or are they going to do something to Becky? Like, is Zelina going to like surprise everybody? Like, what's going on? Like, it's going to be an interesting match this year, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too. Like you said, everybody sort of has a stake in this thing, where like if they win the briefcase, there's obvious directions that you can go. And like you said earlier, it's really interesting that they've been able to make Becky Lynch come out as like an underdog in this whole situation. But again, much like they've done with the men's ladder match, they built this up that it's definitely something you want to see play out, and you want to see who's going to grab that briefcase. Because again, I don't think in this situation there's really a bad choice for the women in terms of who they pick to carry that briefcase, because again, they each have an individual pathway that makes them compelling. So it's a good thing for WWE. Like he said, they've done a really good job of putting this together.
But, and this is a big but, they better not pull that fun little habit that WWE's had over the last few years with the women and the Money in the Bank ladder match, where they cash in the goddamn briefcase within a day of having it.
Yeah.
We better not do that.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. As far as it goes right now, there's no title matches for the women on Money in the Bank, correct?
No.
I don't think there's a listed match for Rhea to defend the title, or for Asuka to defend the title. So at least for now, I think we're safe from that. But yeah,
just keep it more than 2 days. That's all I want.
Yeah, the whole idea of the Money in the Bank briefcase, what makes it interesting is sort of the chase. There hasn't been an instance where like whoever is cashing in that briefcase, they don't get a big reaction. Even Nikki A.S.H. got a big reaction when she cashed in the briefcase. So the briefcase has that sort of power, where whoever's going to cash it in, that moment that they do cash it in, it's going to get a big reaction. It's just like you said, it's better when they hold on to it. You know, I think Carmella held on to it for like 280 days or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was the last time anybody has held it for that long. Everybody was in within a couple hours. So I think WWE might realize their mistake there and might actually go that route of holding on to it for a little while.
I hope so. And I did see something rather interesting. I don't know if you saw this rumor too. I saw a potential rumor that the Women's Money in the Bank briefcase was going to lead to a failed cash-in, which a lot of people were very upset about. And at first I was too, but then I actually thought about it and I'm like, oh, there's a very specific scenario that they can do this and it would actually make sense. And it's so obvious that I think people were just like, the obvious was eluding them at that point. It's so obvious. Io wins the briefcase. Bayley still kind of hangs around like, okay, well, it wasn't me, but I guess I'm glad you still won it. And then when Io goes to cash it in, Bayley takes that opportunity to screw her out of the title and be like, if I can't get it, neither can you. There you go.
I like that.
And that's how Damage Control dies. So if that happens again, you're welcome. I will take my payments, but that would, I think, be the only acceptable failed cash in, I think, is if that's the case. Other than that, let's not, but I feel like that would be a very plausible case, I believe.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. It's definitely a, again, it's something you can branch off of and do multiple things afterward. That'll make a lot of sense. And again, this is all about creating compelling storylines and momentum going into those storylines. So yeah, I definitely can see that happening, and that'll definitely get a reaction out of the fan base for sure.
Fair, exactly. So then bookmark that at a part of the episode, just in case. Just in case we talked it into existence again, but...
Yeah.
Anyways, why do Seth and Cody hate doctors and their advice? I don't know.
That fragile male ego.
Apparently, they just don't want to be told no, I guess. Like, yeah. Hey, your arm's hanging off by, like, a tendon. Eh, no, it's fine. I got it.
Yeah, not only that, but, like, Seth Rollins gets obliterated by Balor, yeah, and he still goes out there and he has a match with Braun Breaker with taped up ribs and everything like that. Yeah, it's just, I guess, like, what it does is, like, it gets us to be like, ah, look at that guy, he's so strong, and, you know, like, he doesn't want to take doctor's orders or anything like that. Except me, on the other hand,
yeah, was, the complete opposite.
Yeah,
you're an idiot.
Me, I'm like, put me down. I need to, I'm out.
Let me take a nap, please.
Yeah. So yeah, I just think it's like that fragile male ego where it's like, no, I have to do this. I have to complete this. You know, it's just like,
push through.
Yeah. Push through the pain, I guess.
Yeah. We lean more towards it's dumb, but that's just us. That's just our opinion. Yeah. We kind of touched on this one a little bit. So Wardlow has lost the TNT title 3 times during Orange Cassidy's international reign. So in the entire time Orange has been champion, Wardlow's lost the belt 3 times.
Jesus
Christ. How sad is that? So who is more directionless, Wardlow himself or the belt itself? I could say both.
Yeah, it's got to be a both situation, because if you look at the TNT title, like, who held that belt and made it interesting?
Not named Brody or Darby.
But they didn't even hold it that long. I mean, Darby, to an extent, because he's had multiple title reigns with it, but even then, he kind of lost it, and you're like, he lost it? Like, they're already taking it off of him?
I feel like that's the, yeah, it's kind of the belt in a nutshell, where it's like, didn't they just win this last week? Like, yeah, what's going on? Yeah, I feel like the belt itself is kind of cursed at this point. They might need to, like, sage it or something, but...
They need to do something. Put it on someone.
Perform an exorcism on it or something.
Just let somebody run with it for, like, 6 months.
Yeah, not 2 weeks, please.
Yeah, I don't care about the TNT title. It, as a fan, it holds no weight. It's just like,
no.
They butchered it into the ground. It's, who's making these calls? Is it the network that's like not knowing anything about professional wrestling?
Which, I mean, it does look a little like that, doesn't it?
Oh my god, Wardlow has to have some pictures of somebody.
He's got someone's blackmailing him for something. Like,
yeah, something, because I mean, for God's sake, this man had his car broken into.
Yeah, his stuff was stolen.
Oh my God.
It's cursed. It's just cursed.
Cursed. Cursed.
We did touch on this one as well. What were our thoughts on the Adam Cole MJF finish, and do time limits work in this day and age? For the second part of that question, I think they do, because you kind of alluded to it earlier. You don't really think about it until it actually happens, and you're like, oh yeah, mm-hmm, wait, that actually is a thing. Like, again, we're not sitting there going, oh no, this is minute 28 out of 30. They better hurry this match up. It's like, you just are so enamored or just so involved in the match that you forget the time limits are a thing, because I just don't. And I'm glad that's the one thing AEW doesn't do, because as we've seen, they have a very bad habit of running certain tropes and stipulations and stuff into the ground, or just, you know, blood in general. So they, mm-hmm, could easily use this as a cop-out of, okay, well, and free like convoluted or confusing or just complicated kind of match we have, we'll just slap a time limit onto it and just use that as an excuse or a crutch. And they don't. Mm-hmm. This is the first time in a long time that they've used the time limit. So I thought it was pretty genius. If they were dead set on having this match and it wasn't even a title match yet, it is a pretty smart way to have the match end where both of them didn't have to eat a pin or anything. So I think it was mm-hmm. a best case scenario.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. As long as they don't run that trope into the ground, because it was successful this go around, it doesn't mean, you know, let's do it 3-4 more times within the span of a year. It's one of those things where it works because it's so unexpected from a fan standpoint. And then if you have a match like that MJF Adam Cole match where it's like you can't look away from the screen because it's so good, you get lost in the moment. Yeah. You know, time means nothing to you.
Exactly.
So to have that happen, it's like coming down off of a high, you know, that you didn't want to come down off of. Yep. You know, it's abruptly ending right there and then, and you're like, damn. So and then they tease you with the 5 minutes and MJF's like, nah, I don't want to do that. So it's perfect. It's just, again, like you said, don't run that trope into a ground. Like, it's just a special thing that can only be like the last scenario available, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It has to be like the last possible outcome you can come up with to make sure that both these men don't come out of this damaged because of a loss.
Exactly. You gotta use it sparingly and in perfect moments. And I think this was definitely one of those perfect moments for sure.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And Jack's final comment is Jungle Boy called Hook his best friend. So yeah, he's turning with a sad face.
Yep.
It's the curse. I told
you. It's happening. It's happening. It's gonna happen. They're gonna go for a tag team title gold. They're gonna lose. And Jungle Boy is going to do the old chair shot to the back.
and all after we got the Jungle Hook Pride shirts. Like, you know what? What the hell? During Pride Month of all times. No. No.
Oh, man.
It's going to suck when it happens, but it's going to happen, unfortunately.
It's going to happen.
The best friend curse.
The thing about it, too, is like, I think a lot of people feel the same way, so it's like every single move that Jungle Boy makes is going to be under so much scrutiny. It's like
we're all going to be staring.
Yeah, so the good thing to do is kind of do the tropes, like, you know, he reaches for a chair and everybody's like he's gonna do it and he doesn't do anything, you know, or like, you know, he comes in and he wants to help Hook win a match, you know, and he comes in, it looks like he's going to attack Hook, but he doesn't. Like, there's so many ways you can kind of tease it that when it finally happens, you're like, that son of a bitch, you know? But like, Jungle Boy needs it. Yeah, Jungle Boy needs it. He needs that edge, you know? He needs that chip on his shoulder, you know? He's not fond of doing promos, you know? He just likes to go in there and wrestle and do his thing, so he needs some sort of personality, so a chip on his shoulder would do wonders.
Yeah, exactly. So it's we'll be waiting, but also pain. All we know is pain sometimes, but with that though, that is all of the questions we have for tonight.
All right. Those are some we made it through. Those are some great questions. Great questions. Like we said, this podcast is great because we try to cover so much. Obviously, it's AEW and WWE centric, but we try our best to sprinkle in some other stuff. And obviously, with Forbidden Door coming up, this was a fun episode to do, as they are all of them. And all 80, this is episode 86. So all episodes are available on our feed, whether you listen through Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Apple, wherever you listen to podcasts, this show is available. So if you haven't found it on your podcast platform of choice, just send us a message, Say, hey, I listened to my podcast on this show. Can you send me a link or on this platform? Send me a link and we'll do our best to send you a link on a silver platter. But you have to give the silver platter back because we only have one and those things are expensive. So make sure you check us out. Like I said, the podcast, you can subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Apple, Radio Public. Basically, wherever you listen to podcasts, just search The Ringside Rundown and hit that subscribe button. If you want to check us out and get in touch with us, you can hit us up on social media. On Twitter, we're available at Ringside Rundown. And what we do once a week, before we record an episode, we send out a tweet asking whoever is in the vicinity, whoever is looking at the tweet, to send us a wrestling-related question for us to answer on the podcast. That's how this podcast works. You send us questions, we answer them. And every week, I post up a tweet asking you guys to send in questions at Ringside Rundown. So make sure you hit the follow button. And if you have a question, comment, rant, or opinion about anything wrestling, don't be afraid to send us a tweet, and we'll definitely voice it on the show. If you want to get in touch with me and talk to me about anything wrestling, or just check out my interest when it comes to professional wrestling, you can check me out on Twitter, at WrestlingCHRON. That's Wrestling CHRON. Shay, where can they get in touch with you?
You can find me also on Twitter at ShayleenHixon21. You can see my wild, my wild and vast interests, but wrestling is definitely one of them. So if you want to see some fun things, just hit me up on Twitter.
Yeah, and last place to check us out, if you need more of us on your feed, we're available on Instagram. Instagram, the handle is at Ringside Rundown. So if you want some wrestling pictures in your Instagram feed to scroll through, check us out on Instagram. Again, that handle is at Ringside Rundown, just like the Twitter at Ringside Rundown. So multiple places to check us out, see what we have going on, and be a part of our little community that we've built of wrestling fans that like to hear us talk about wrestling.
Yeah, it's a thing that keeps us going, for sure. Our listeners, we appreciate them, every single one of them.
Yeah, and we're always looking for more, so don't be afraid to be a part of the family, for sure.
Yes, please. We're always accepting new members, free of charge.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, and you don't have to even give a sacrifice or anything.
Nothing, just don't touch the silver platter, please.
There you go. There you have it. So for Shay Hixon, my name is Eric Vasquez. This is the Ringside Rundown podcast, and we'll see you on the next one, guys. Have a good one.
See you later, guys.